Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
The Athletic.
It's Straight Outta Cobham, a show about Chelsea FC from The Athletic. Coming up, we'll pay tribute to the Emma Hayes tribute night. Speaking of CFCW, the women were united against Man United. We'll preview the League Cup semi-final second leg. It's Sunday Monday Casa Day as Italian returns. And there's plenty more besides. Available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic. This is Straight Outta Cobham. A very happy Monday to you, listener. We are back to talk about all things Chelsea. No first team game this weekend for the men, but there's loads to reflect on anyway. I shall do it in the company of two of the Athletic's finest. Good morning, Luke Bosher.
Good morning, Matt. How are you?
I'm all right, thanks. Yeah, Liam Toomey's with us. Liam's going to tell us all about his special Sunday night shortly. Reach for the resolve this morning by any chance, or were you professional enough to know that you were coming on the number one Chelsea podcast produced by The Athletic this morning?
Always professional, and nothing clears a sore head like a dog walk. So we're good.
True story. Right, let's start then with where Liam spent his Sunday evening. So, Liam, you headed to the Football Writers Association's Tribute Award do, where Emma Hayes was honoured. She became the first woman to win the award. She's the 42nd recipient of it. We'll hear from Liam on that in a moment, but we ought to start with Emma Hayes.
We all know I'm a Chelsea fan through and through, but I had a small love for Tottenham Hotspur as well. Back in the day. But I aspired to be Glenn Hoddle growing up, because you certainly couldn't be Fran Kirby or Carly Telford. I couldn't even believe that was there to be seen. The first real inspirations and role models in the women's game was the US Women's National Team. And of course, you know, I'll be absolutely delighted come the end of the year to get the chance to lead a wonderful football nation. But for now, I think I want to say a big thank you, first of all, to my family. And I'll say this without crying. I definitely couldn't have done any of this without your support, so thank you.
So, Liam, for the uninitiated, tell us a little bit about this award, first of all. It's an annual thing, right?
Yeah, so every year the Football Writers Association pick someone, a leading light, shall we say, of English football. It's often a coach or a recently retired player to honour for their impact and their achievements in the game. And as you said, Emma Hayes, the first woman to receive the award, the latest in a long line of trails that she's blazed. And it was a really fun evening. I haven't been to loads of these things. There's two FWA events. There's the awards dinner where the men and women's footballer of the year get handed out towards the end of the season. And there's this tribute night, which is always in January. This was my first tribute night. And it was a really nice evening. There were some really nice speakers for Emma. Frank Kirby was there. Carly Telford, who now works at Chelsea, but had lots and lots of experience of dealing with Emma as a player, had their moments on stage to pay tribute to her. There was even a video message from Sir Alex Ferguson, which was a very nice touch. Remarkably, the FWA decided to give this award to Emma Hayes this year, significantly before she announced that this would be her last season at Chelsea. So, as FWA chair John Cross said last night, we look like geniuses, but they had no prior warning. And there were some nice little funny moments when Emma came into the room. It's a big sort of ballroom, and the main table is right in front of the stage. She went to sit off in the corner of the main table and had to be sort of pulled into the front and center position that she belonged in. So it was a very nice evening, and all in honor of a very deserving individual, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Liam mentions Fran Kirby there. We can hear a bit of her speech now. Here is Super Fran on Emma's influence and how she's helped Kirby's career.
I mean, I think she is an absolute fierce leader. She knows what she wants. The ambition was always there when I signed, even when I hadn't signed, we were having discussions and this is the plan, this is what we're going to do. And we share very similar views on football and what we want to achieve, and winning is at the top always. And she is someone who has driven standards on and off the pitch, and has really progressed women's football in this country. I mean, it's actually quite crazy to think about. I think obviously 8.5 years, it's a lot of time to go through a lot of stuff together. I think obviously it's been a journey for both of us, learning about each other and me maturing as much as I could. But yeah, I mean, she is someone that, for me personally, when people stop looking for answers, it was never good enough. And I will always appreciate that, because people go, well, this test has come back, and Emma would be there like, well, let's test for this, let's try this. And she was fighting every day to understand what was going on with me, especially during the pericarditis and everything like that, and my knee injury. It was like trying to work out the best solution. And it was always something that she was driving for others to find out. And I don't think we would have gotten to the bottom of many causes if she hadn't have done that for me. And I think my first knee injury was, I don't even remember the year now, but I had multiple scans and no one understood what was wrong with what was going on with my knee. Obviously now I've had surgery on it recently, but it was never good enough. It was always, well, no, we need to go and look at this person. This person needs to look at her scans and we need to understand what's going on. And to have someone fight for you in your corner and having to explain to people that you're in pain and they don't really understand why, or you're going through something, to have someone who's backing you and is trying to fight for you, it makes you more determined to come back. And every time I've had a setback, Emma has done what she can to find the source. And I feel for me to come back in the best shape is only what I can do to thank her for helping me. And I think that's been one of the reasons. I think people ask me, why, how do you keep coming back? And it's like, I want to show that it's worth it. And I want to show that people who fight for you in your corner, you want to come back and do well for them.
Lovely stuff. Luke, we're going to talk about the game on Sunday in a moment, but you see the reaction to Emma's speech on X, formerly known as Twitter, this morning, and having listened to it ourselves, it kind of reinforces the point that this is just going to be an absolutely massive loss to Chelsea Football Club as a whole, particularly the women's team, obviously. But this is such a significant event that's going to happen at the end of this season when she walks away in floods of tears.
Yeah, no one's going to be happy to see Emma Hayes leave, and obviously, you know, the search for her successor continues. I know Hayes was speaking a little bit about it after that Man United game, saying that she obviously trusts Chelsea to get the decision right. But the longer the wait goes on, I think the more anxious Chelsea fans will be potentially. Obviously, Jonathan Giraldez, the Barcelona women coach, has taken up a role in the NWSL, and that was kind of one name. Not necessarily a popular name, but that was one name, very successful coach in Barcelona that had been linked with the role. So we'll see how that process plays out. But yeah, very, very big shoes to fill from a Chelsea perspective.
There was a sizable delegation from the US Soccer Federation at the event and also at Chelsea's game earlier in the day against Manchester United, almost as if they're man marking Emma Hayes to try and make sure she doesn't change her mind between now and the end of the season. There was a nice little nod to Lauren James at the start of proceedings as well for making sure that the mood of the night was not undercut by a shock defeat at home to Manchester United. The other interesting thing, no senior figures from Chelsea at the event.
All right, well, that was the awards. As Liam mentioned, it was set up for a good evening because Chelsea got the job done against Manchester United. We'll talk about that next.
Well, it's fallen nicely here for Lauren James. Can she rubber stamp this victory? Of course she can. Lauren James with another Stamford Bridge hat-trick to confirm victory for Chelsea.
So earlier on Sunday, Chelsea made sure they stayed in charge of the WSL title race by beating Manchester United 3-1 in front of more than 20,000 at Stamford Bridge. Lauren James scored her second hat-trick there this season to win it for the Blues. The United made a game of it in the second half. Luke, it looked as though this was going to be a comfortable victory when James scored her first goal just 4 minutes in and then had doubled the lead midway through the first half. But credit to United, that goal back before half time really changed the game, didn't it? And it looked as though they were just as likely to get something from it as Chelsea to get the third for much of the second half, certainly.
Yeah, I think Chelsea and Emma Hayes would be a bit disappointed with how that kind of first 20, 25 minutes after the second half went, as you say, Matt, because United came out really strong. Chelsea obviously made a tactical tweak with Mia Fischel coming off and Shuka Nuskin coming on, and that didn't really go to plan. I think James then, you know, playing as a number nine, struggled to get in the game as much as she had done when she'd been playing behind Fischel. And I think Chelsea were a little bit lucky to get away with not conceding a penalty. It was a bit of a touch and go one. There was a bit of contact, Lawrence on Leah Galton, I think it was. And Mark Skinner was fuming about it after the game when I saw his post-match interview to Man United TV, and he was going, oh, it's a disgrace and it's unfair on the players, etc, etc. And, you know, whatever people think about Mark Skinner, I thought he had a little bit of a point. But, you know, credit to Chelsea for kind of standing relatively firm. I thought Hannah Hampton did well in goal. You know, obviously hasn't made as many appearances as she would have liked this season, but made a couple of good stops. I think one in the first half, one in the second half particularly, kept Chelsea in it. And then obviously, you know, James has run through and scored a late third. So it ended up looking on paper a lot more comfortable than it actually was live.
We spoke, Liam, didn't we, with Jesse in particular about who was going to step up and fill the void in Sam Kerr's absence. And we wondered if Chelsea might get somebody in to do that. Jesse said they wouldn't. They'd just rejig things. I mean, Lauren James absolutely stepped up here. But as Luke said, she was almost more effective with Fischl up there rather than her playing as a central striker. And that's what happened in the cup game against West Ham, wasn't it, from the start? We kind of thinking that is not going to be where she ultimately plays whilst Kerr is out. And the better option is to have her kind of roaming and finding spaces like she did for the first 45 minutes against United.
Yeah, she seems to operate more effectively around a focal point. Although, you know, her third goal did come after she was put up front playing off the shoulder. Her ability to finish with both feet is really, really impressive. She's just so calm in front of goal. And so I think she can play in that number nine position, but it will probably be more situational in games rather than starting week to week in that spot while Kerr is out. And I think she probably just benefits more, or the team rather will probably benefit more from her being in position to receive the ball to feet in a bit more space in wide areas, because that's where her ball carrying can be so valuable and devastating at times. But it looks to me that obviously Sam Kerr, you know, going down with such a serious injury is in many ways a sporting tragedy and certainly a huge issue for Chelsea to navigate. But there's also part of me that thinks that this could be the moment where Lauren James really blows up and becomes a proper global superstar of the women's game. She's flashed that level of talent on a fairly regular basis in the last couple of years. But, you know, if she can put some more consistency together now as the real main feature of this attack, shall we say, regardless of where she's playing. This could be a real opportunity for her now to step up another level.
Yeah, well, it was an important win for Chelsea because Arsenal and Manchester City both picked up maximum points as well. It means that the Blues stay 3 points clear at the top. And Neve Charles was captain for this game, that in the week that she signed a new 3-year contract with Chelsea. And Natalie Bjorn made her first start look pretty assured as well and played a nice through ball for James's second goal. So attention now switches to the Champions League. Chelsea play Real Madrid on Wednesday. Win that, and they're through to the knockout rounds. If they're victorious and Hacken and Paris draw, Chelsea will be confirmed as group winners. So a big week. And then on Saturday tea time, there's a WSL game away to Brighton. All right, we'll head back to the men's first team next. We're going to talk about a returning Italian.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So Chelsea have recalled midfielder Cesare Casadei from loan at Leicester City. The Italian played 25 times for the Foxes. He scored 3 goals. Liam, is this a result of the injuries to Ogachukwu and Lavia maybe being a bit more long-term than we thought? Is this because they want to, I don't know, get Andre Santos out on loan to Leicester or something? It's a bit of a head-scratcher, right? Because Casadei was just starting to play more and more for Leicester with Wilfred Ndidi being out injured.
Yeah, he was. I think he's found it difficult to break into that team, partly because Chelsea might have made a strategic miscalculation, not just with him, but with a couple of the other guys who were on the pre-season tour, including Andre Santos, where by keeping those guys for the trip to the US, they denied them the opportunity of a pre-season with their loan clubs. And so Casadei was always playing catch-up, really, trying to break into the best team in the championship with a very, very strong midfield when everyone's fit. And so, yes, he's been getting on the pitch a little bit more, but more often than not, he's been sort of the 12th, 13th man there. And that I don't think that's what Chelsea would have envisioned after certainly his international exploits in the summer and then some nice flashes in the US as part of that tour squad. So maybe it's with a view to sending him somewhere else to play. I think if they try and keep him around, it could be a bit of a waste because he's certainly not a replacement for Ogachukwu positionally. They're completely different types of midfielders. Maybe you could say he could take some of the minutes load off someone like Conor Gallagher as a number eight. But while he did have good moments in that preseason, he also looked very raw. And if he wasn't considered ready to play big minutes in that Leicester team, it's hard to see how he can significantly help Chelsea in the second half of the season. I think it might be with a view to finding a different home for him where he is a nailed-on starter. But we'll have to see. They've got the rest of January to figure that out.
Luke, if we say that he's going to stay at Chelsea, and I accept Liam's argument that he might just be being lined up for a loan somewhere else, but could you say, if we're saying he's staying, that Maurizio Pochettino is thinking, well, I'd rather have somebody who's played a lot of first-team football this season making up my bench than Leo Castledine? Obviously, Alex Matos has now gone out to Huddersfield. So is he effectively going to be there to fill a place on the bench, potentially, for Chelsea? Because as Liam says, it's difficult to see where he would fit in as a first-team regular at this stage of his career.
Yeah, that's potentially would be quite a short-termist kind of view from Pochettino, because you're essentially saying, I need this player now, rather than, okay, we won't have this player now, but we'll allow him to go on loan and develop so that in 6 or 18 months, he can come back and be potentially a key contributor at Chelsea. But I do take that point that Chelsea, you know, have been quite lucky that Conor Gallagher hasn't gone down with injury this season, because even though Caicedo and Ugochukwu have had, you know, injury troubles, if Gallagher or Enzo Fernandez, you know, suffered a potentially serious injury, Chelsea really don't have any kind of replacement for them in their squad. So Cassaday would, you know, is, as Liam said, is closer to their profile than one of the defensive midfielders. But I guess the kind of interesting or weird thing about Chelsea recalling Cassaday when they did is that, not that he would be in line to get serious minutes because they're two very, very important games, but he's not eligible to play against Middlesbrough or Aston Villa, which are Chelsea's next two games, because he's already featured for Leicester in both of those competitions. So yeah, he'll be training with the rest of the team at Cobham, but he could have stayed at Leicester and played a few more minutes for them before coming back to Chelsea.
Just on that, the suggestion, I believe, is that it was the last day that Chelsea could have recalled him with the loan agreement. I don't know why January 20th was specified as the last day that Cesare Cassaday could have been recalled by Chelsea, but it seems like that was in the agreement. So that would explain why it doesn't make much sense from Chelsea's season, I think. But maybe that lends more credence to the idea that they are just trying to buy themselves a little bit of a buffer between now and the end of the month to find a new home for him.
What about Diego Moreira, Liam? Recalled from his loan at Lyon, who are having an absolutely dreadful season, are in real danger of being relegated from Liga. And is this Chelsea recalling him to free up an international loan spot? Is this Lyon saying, we don't need an 18-year-old at the moment, we're trying to get out of a relegation battle? He only made 5 starts for them, didn't he? Didn't get any goals. Presumably, he just comes back and gets a place in the dev squad, or are they looking at an English loan for him?
Don't have a clear handle on what Moreira's next development move is, but I do think this recall is about the international loan spot and maybe broadening the options when it comes to Andre Santos. Because despite the fact that they both had extremely frustrating, limited experiences on loan in the first half of this season, I do think Santos is significantly further along in terms of being first team ready somewhere than Moreira is. Moreira looks very raw. He looked raw in pre-season. On the surface, he had an opportunity when he went to Lyon because they just sold Bradley Barcola to PSG. They had a space on the right of their attack, and he hasn't been able to nail that down, despite, as you say, Matt, the team struggling historically in Liga this year. So he's probably best served, I think, at least in the immediate, by having some dev squad football. Maybe seeing him up close in the next week and a half will help the judgment between now and the end of the month. But it does feel more broadly that Chelsea have not necessarily planned forensically around these international loan spots. It does feel a little bit haphazard. We've also had David Washington just kind of hanging around for the first half of this season, the first team squad, and he hasn't been as superfluous as he might have been with Nkunku out. He's at least been a fairly regular fixture on the bench, but he's clearly not ready to play for Chelsea. So they need to figure this out in a way that actually meaningfully develops all these guys, because that's why you paid the money.
Yeah, on Moreira, I think, again, getting into the sort of minutiae of loan deals, I think he has to stay at Chelsea, right? Because he played for Chelsea in the Carabao Cup right before he went to Lyon. So he's played for 2 clubs this season, or been registered for and played. So I don't think he can go out to a third.
That's a good point, yeah.
So I think he must be in the dev squad, which, you know, he's still 19, I think. So that's not necessarily a bad age to be in the dev squad. It's not like he's, you know, getting into 20, 21, 22, where, you know, he's definitely wanting first team minutes, and it'll be a, you know, potentially a bit of a safer environment out of the sort of spotlight of Lyon. As you say, you guys were talking about that, you know, they've been absolutely terrible this year. Their fans are in uproar. They've sacked 2 managers, I think. So it's potentially a bit easier for him. And I think they're trying to get in Danjuma from Everton or via Villarreal, something complicated to do with their, you know, they want different players for their own loan spots. But again, on that loan spot issue that Liam mentions, I think, you know, I absolutely agree that it doesn't seem to have been loads of planning from Chelsea. But at the same time, possibly their hand was forced, because they would have ideally liked to have probably sold, you know, Romelu Lukaku and Hakim Ziyech and maybe even Kepa Arrizabalaga, but, you know, weren't able to do so. And those had to become, certainly the first two had to become loan spells when Chelsea would rather have received fees. And then the Kepa situation was very much brought on by Courtois' injury. So those international loan spots were suddenly taken up, and they're very much restricting Chelsea's freedom in terms of some of these younger guys, you know, that would have really benefited potentially from spells abroad. But because, you know, maybe there's an argument to say that, you know, Casadei could do well, you know, maybe back in Italy at a mid-table Serie A club, and Andre Santos, maybe, you know, he speaks Brazilian, could be in Portugal or somewhere. But, you know, as it happens, it looks like Chelsea are probably only going to be able to loan out one of them to a foreign club, really restricting their development and potential ability to play for Chelsea or have real sell on value in the summer or in the future. So certainly next summer, I think, or I like to think, we'll see Chelsea thinking a bit more carefully about these international loan spots, because I believe from next year it goes from 7 to 6, and then it's 6 thereafter. But by the same token, they will obviously hope to have made a few more of those sales, so would have a bit more freedom.
And presumably not signing about 5 more international teenagers to add to the pile.
Well, yeah, let's put that on the maybe pile for a moment. What I can say with certainty that the question in Thursday's quiz, against whom and in what competition did Diego Moreira make his Chelsea debut, has been struck from the records. thanks for that, Luke. Right. There's a League Cup semi-final coming up this week. I mean, tomorrow as we record. We better look ahead to that next.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Catch all new episodes Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
So it's Chelsea against Middlesbrough at Stamford Bridge Tuesday night. The Blues looking to overturn a one-goal deficit from the first leg and book their place in next month's Carabao Cup final. Luke, to Chelsea benefit here from having had 10 days without a game? Middlesbrough slogged to a 1-1 home draw against Rotherham on Saturday. They got loads and loads of injuries. Are you better off having the momentum of playing or having that little period away from each other and then back at Cobham working on preparations for this game?
No, I think in Chelsea's case, the kind of mid-season break will definitely be to their benefit. I think we saw with a couple of teams over this weekend, I think, you know, Arsenal came off the back of some pretty poor results and then played Crystal Palace at home on the Saturday lunchtime kickoff and looked really, really good. I mean, albeit Palace looked terrible, but Arsenal looked pretty good. They looked very well rested and refreshed. And I know Bukayo Saka was talking about the benefits of them, you know, having that time off. And Arsenal had a bit more time off and ended up going to Dubai. And I think, you know, as Sai wrote about in a piece a couple of weeks ago, Chelsea elected to not go away because they didn't have enough time because of their cup commitments. But I still think the 10 days you know, at Cobham, just not playing, I think that will do some of these players the world of good. And, you know, it will allow someone like Ben Chilwell to get more, you know, first team training reps under his belt. And yeah, as you say, Middlesbrough slogging away in the EFL, very challenging for them. So, you know, Chelsea playing at home, I think, you know, really have to be strong, strong favourites.
Yeah, if you think Chelsea's injury list is bad, take a look at Middlesbrough's. To borrow a line from The Athletic's Jack Lang, they'll be decaffeinated because Latte Lath is definitely out. Johnny Howson's a doubt. They've got players away at the Asian Cup. Could have up to 14 people unavailable for this game. And one of them, Liam, might colour Maurizio Pochettino's selection a little bit, because Isaiah Jones gave Levi Colwill a torrid time at the Riverside Stadium, but he limped off in the game against Rotherham on Saturday. Do you expect that we'll see the same back four with Colwill at left back here, or would you be risking throwing Ben Chilwell in from the start?
I think it depends what they see physically from Chilwell in training. They had 3 days off after the last game, and then they've been training ever since. So they will have seen Chilwell close up for a sustained period and seen how his body's responded. Got the sense at the time that they were going to be really ultra cautious with him, because this isn't the first time he's had hamstring issues. Of course, his injury history goes beyond that at Chelsea. So I think they'll be cautious with him. I wouldn't be surprised to see Colwill left back again, particularly if Middlesbrough don't have anyone who can run fast to put against him, because Isaiah Jones was Middlesbrough's entire attacking game plan, really, in the first leg. Just hit it long over Colwill and play from there. And it worked for them. It worked for them brilliantly, partly because Chelsea didn't defend properly. I mean, it wouldn't have been an excuse anyway, but it removes another thing that might have been a semblance of an excuse for Chelsea to have problems in this game. They should get this done. It's only one goal. They've got 90 minutes, 120 if they need them, although please don't need them, Chelsea. For any of us who are there, please don't need 120 minutes to sort this out. But they've got no excuses. They have to get into the final. It's their biggest game of the season so far, and we get to see how these young players respond to real stakes.
Yeah, and they've not responded brilliantly to games away from home, but they have been excellent at Stamford Bridge of late. Haven't lost there since the end of October. 1-5 of the last six. And actually, Luke, I wonder if the last three home games have been good preparation for this one. Palace, Preston and Fulham, all to varying degrees. I'm going to have to say low block, but coming and defending deep. And that's surely what Middlesbrough are going to do in this match too.
Yeah, I think you're right, Matt. I think Chelsea have shown that they are starting to kind of develop ways of getting past that low block, as you say. So, yeah, definitely. I'm excited to see, you know, what kind of team Maurizio Pochettino picks, because I think he's continuing to have quite a lot of options, even with a few potential injuries and Nicholas Jackson away at AFCON. There's definitely some questions over who he starts in his attack.
Yeah, well, that was what I was going to ask you about, Liam, because you've written about Armando Breuer and Chelsea's attempts to try and move him on this month in the January transfer window. But if ever there was a case for starting with the striker, you go on the evidence of the first leg, right? Where Chelsea kept putting the ball in the box. There was nobody to turn it away. Cole Palmer could have had a first half hat trick and missed all the chances. So Breuer, even though they're trying to move him on, is he guaranteed to start this game?
I don't know if he's totally guaranteed, because the flip side to that from the first game is that they did get those chances for Palmer. So it wasn't as if they were purely banging their heads against the brick wall. I did find it quite frustrating just objectively to watch them swing crosses in while Palmer was the false nine. And then the moment Breuer got in, they stopped doing it. So in that sense, maybe if you're thinking that Middlesbrough are going to play from the start the way they played once they went 1-0 up in the first game, then that suggests maybe it's a game for Breuer, because you could well need that focal point to play around and just to try and occupy defenders in the box and create little bits of space for other people like Palmer to work in. We'll get a better sense. I'm heading to Mauricio Pochettino's press conference immediately after we record this of where Christopher Nkunku is in his latest recovery. That would be a massive boost if he's in position to play any part in this, because I think we've already seen in limited minutes that he, like Palmer, has the ability to do something unexpected in the final third and create a chance either for him or for someone else. But they're going to need to be patient. Regardless of who Pochettino starts with, they're going to need to be patient. if the crowd start getting frustrated, they can't let themselves lose their heads, and we suddenly see Axel De Zassi letting fly from 30 yards, which I've seen him do the Rudiger a couple of times recently. So this will be a test of their maturity as much as anything. Can they keep their heads and get this done?
Yeah, Middlesbrough, not bad away from home. They won at Millwall a couple of weeks ago. They've actually won four of their last five on the road, albeit against a different calibre of opposition. Luke, as Liam mentioned there, this is the biggest game of the season, right? The ramifications of defeat probably don't bear thinking about. But if Chelsea can book their place in a Wembley final, then that's going to give momentum to the game against Villa in the FA Cup on Friday and just make everything feel a bit better, basically, as we've seen the uptick certainly at home in recent months. But there needs to be some tangible reward from that, and a League Cup final place would be okay for Maurizio Pochettino's first season, right?
Yeah, definitely. It does feel already like so much is resting on this one game against Middlesbrough at home, because, you know, if Chelsea do go out to championship opposition over two legs, there'll be huge questions over playing staff and coaching staff and, you know, even the transfer hierarchy as well. And obviously, you know, I think looking at the Carabao Cup, it's likely to be Liverpool in the final, but you'd still say on balance that it's probably Chelsea's best chance of getting in Europe for next season, which, you know, will massively help, you know, in terms of attracting players, and will help a little bit in terms of FFP, although I'm not sure that the huge finances on offer from the Conference League will boost the coffers that much, but it'd still be a nice little pot. But yeah, it's you know, I almost don't want to get into the hypotheticals of if they lose, because Chelsea Twitter or X will be such a painful place to be a part of. But I kind of going into it optimistic. I do think, you know, all the signs are pointing towards a Chelsea victory. So I think you have to go with logic. I think, you know, what is it? The simplest solution is sometimes the one that happens. There's something like that.
Clip up the first bit of that answer, Lucy. All the signs are pointing toward a Chelsea victory.
Just casually wheeling out Occam's razor at the end.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what we're all here for. All right, well, we're going to react to it in our show on Thursday. Let's hope that Chelsea can make it through. Speaking of boosting the coffers, if they get to the final, you get £50,000, win it, and that's doubled to £100,000. And people wonder why big clubs don't take it that seriously. Elsewhere in Chelsea news, the under-18s battled the odds and the elements to make it through to the fifth round of the FA Youth Cup on Sunday. The Young Blues won 2-0 away at Everton, despite having Caden Wilson sent off just 9 minutes into a wind-swept game on Merseyside. Danelle McNeely had the Blues 1-0 up by half-time, and Tyreek George added a second in the second half. Those are two names that we seem to be mentioning every week, so definitely worth keeping an eye on. Chelsea will go to Crystal Palace in Round 5. The under-21s are in action tonight as we record. They play Colchester in the Premier League Cup. They've already booked their place in the knockout stages of that competition. That's going to just about do us for today. Liam, tell us a little bit more about your piece on Armando Broya before we leave, please.
Yeah, so the piece I wrote, the column I wrote, was about Broya, but also not about Broya. It was hooked on the news reported by our colleague David Ornstein last week that Chelsea are willing to sell Armando Broya, which really means that they're hoping to sell Armando Broya, and assessing really the structural limits of the modern transfer market. Because if you really look at it and break it down, and I looked at last summer's transfer deals to do this, you are only selling in the Premier League if you're looking for a fee of £30 million or more. Unless, you know, Bayern Munich, Barcelona, Real Madrid, or Paris Saint-Germain suddenly decide that Armando Broya is the missing piece of the jigsaw. And I don't think he's a target for the Saudi Pro League either. So it is the Premier League, but actually, when you look at it, it's even more limited than that, because if you're selling a player that you don't think is good enough for you, the Big Six won't want him, or the other five of the Big Six won't want him. And then you look at the other end of the table, and there are kind of the bottom seven clubs, including the three promoted ones, that either can't afford to pay fees of that size, or they're in PSR trouble, like Everton and Nottingham Forest, or they really struggle to convince players who are on the books at Chelsea to join, as Chelsea found with Trevor Chalobah and Nottingham Forest and Ian Matson and Burnley last summer. So the piece is really looking more at that, the conditions of the market and the challenges they provide, not just to sell Breuer, but even to sell, you know, these genuinely coveted Cobham graduates who've had this great football education, aren't on massive wages and have lots of potential resale value. Just the nature of the transfer market means that you are pitching to a diminishing pool of clubs, and that makes things quite challenging.
We'll see if Chelsea make any progress in that regard as the transfer window starts to wind down. Not that long left in January. Athletic.com/ChelseaPod, the place to go to sign up if you want to read that and all Liam and Luke's excellent work. We mentioned last week Simon's piece on the battle for Chelsea's number one spot. That's up there too. Lots of other good stuff as well. If you'd like to leave us a five-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your pods, that helps us as well. Would be much appreciated. You can follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter, at SOCobhamPod2. That'll do it for today there. Many thanks to Luke, to Liam, to Lucy, and to you for joining us. We'll be back with another show on Thursday. Bye for now.
The Athletic.